Hi, it's Karen Webster, and welcome to Topic TBD, our weekly show where we take a topic that is making news and is both newsworthy in payments. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Bruce Parker, the CEO of Modo Payments. Bruce, thanks for joining me today.
Karen, such a privilege, such a pleasure to talk with you, as always.
I had to restrain my little Bruce intro because you and I go way back, and we have our own little intro.
But that we're stunningly young for how far back we go.
We certainly are. But the topic that we're going to talk about is stunningly not so young, actually. It's
no, not at all.
It's one of the age-old conundrums of payments, and I think it's particularly relevant today because we talk about the two words that we're going to define more precisely today, integration and interoperability. We often use them interchangeably, and Bruce, your position is that that's a mistake. Tell us why.
Well, it's a mistake because I think we're missing out on something. But maybe I'll delve into briefly, and we'll, I'm sure, get deeper on all of this, what is integration versus what is interoperability. So integration is making two things similar and making sure that they can communicate along the same path, speak the same language might be the right way to net that out. Interoperability means, no, I don't have to make them similar. I can be heterogeneous on both sides. I can speak two different languages on two different endpoints and not have to worry about the fact that there are those differences. And in payments, we basically universally do integrations, right? We integrate to various card networks, we integrate to bank networks, we integrate with great providers of digital wallets and other checkout services, so on and so forth. We integrate things to make like and like, and in very few cases do we end up having dissimilar services on both sides. So a challenge that Modo has seen a number of times is, how do I get corporate payment types visible within a product that's really intended or is primarily used by consumers, or vice versa? How do I deliver a new method of payment or a new type of value delivery system into an environment that really doesn't know what to do with it, but is familiar with something else? How do I deal with two things that aren't the same in payments and deliver that in a, what we would say, interoperable way rather than in an integration way?
So it's a very nuanced difference, but obviously an important one to consider, particularly now with all the digital modes of payment and all the connected endpoints that people are trying to do business with and interact with. What are people really missing, though? Because I think that most people would listen to your description and say, but isn't integration also providing the opportunity to be interoperable, even if it's within a network and a variety of endpoints? Isn't that interoperability?
Oh, I see. Sure. Well, let me break away from payments for just a minute. So if you'll forgive me, because I know we'd much rather be talking exclusively about payment stuff, because it's awesome. Let me use an analogy of, like, email. So I'm a diehard Android person. I'm a Pixel person. My Pixel 2 should be here shortly. And I believe, if I remember correctly, you're a little bit more of an iPhone person yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And never have the two of us ever discussed what carrier networks we happen to choose. I'm in Dallas, hometown of AT&T, so there's mine. I don't know what yours is, and it doesn't matter, actually. If I send you an email, the fact that I'm, you know, wedded to Gmail, which I am, doesn't really matter if you've decided, well, you're going to use Apple, you might use Microsoft, you might use a Bless from Yahoo. You know, whatever method you have, maybe it's private, maybe it's one of the services for dealing with email, if I send you a message, there's all kinds of interoperability going on where we're moving from network to network. And I don't need to understand about your choices, and you don't need to understand about mine. If I now take that example and I try and bridge it back into payments, it matters very, if I want to pay you with a card product, mm-hmm. and it's on a particular network, let's mm-hmm. say it's on our good friends at MasterCard's network,
mm-hmm.
if you are not in a position to accept a MasterCard transaction, if you in fact are not on the MasterCard network through an acquiring relationship or through a gateway or processor, you are not going to be able to actually receive my transaction mm-hmm. that initiated on the MasterCard network.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of example where I need the ability to be able to initiate a transaction in one mode, have it show up in another mode, and really not have to worry about the things that are happening in the middle. So that could be corporate transactions that need to end up on the consumer side. It could be consumer transactions that need to end up on the corporate side. And that's kind of where Modo is seeing a lot of that interplay today, where in particular digital wallets are growing up and starting to consume new use cases outside of their usual purview, and they start bumping into, well, wait a second, we're not used to using digital wallets. And this is a deal that we've announced last year with Bank of America. We're privileged to be a part of this use case in the gig economy of payments going from large corporations to individuals, a lot of it having to do with digital content for developers, for all sorts of things like that. So the opportunity then is to say, well, if I as a large corporation could just leverage the presence of a completely different method of payment than I'm normally used to using for disbursements, I'm very accustomed to ACH, very accustomed to check. Well, now what I really want to do is I really want to use the fact that all these folks have PayPal, all these folks have Alipay, all these folks have M-Pesa. Depending on the region that they're in, they might have Klarna, a great friend in Sweden. So the opportunity then is to say, well, if I, Google, with YouTube, want to pay an individual, I need to be able to interoperate. If Bank of America Merrill Lynch is my bank, which I believe they are, I'd like to be able to say, yeah, I know someone's email address. Why do I need to know anything else? I shouldn't have to know anything else. Let's let the beneficiary of this YouTube, viral content on the video, probably having something to do with some kitten doing something adorable. If we're going to deliver value, let's let the beneficiary determine how we do that. Oh, and by the way, let's use one of these mechanisms that radically reduces friction. But as soon as we try and do things like that, the problem that immediately arises is the digital wallets expect you to be on network. They expect you to have value in network. If Google wants to do that, then they need to have an account, or they presumably would need to have an account within the digital wallet to be able to fund the transaction wallet to wallet. Well, but that's not actually what they want to do. They'd rather have their bank take care of that. So we quickly get into this whole series of concerns, unlike our example with email, where, yeah, no, I really do need to know what form of payment you want. I really do need to be a participant in a network and make choices about how I'm going to move value that we're so used to in other contexts not having to worry about. And that's the point at which I'm spending more time at this stage of our conversation on, you know, what is interoperability. We can come back to what is integration, but that's the issue of interoperability. It's let either side make whatever choice they want. Just like you've chosen Apple, I've chosen Android, one of us is right, and we can send communications back and forth to each other seamlessly, and we don't need to have established any sort of understanding about that before we start.
So there is a technology that is enabling the distribution of payment to a variety of endpoints based on the preference of the receiver. So whether that's, I want this in my PayPal account, I want to pick up cash at an agent location, I want to put this into my checking account. Is that what we're talking about here?
Yeah. So in the example of disbursements, which I think is a great place to start, somebody like Google really doesn't care how the value gets to that video content provider. As mm-hmm. my children were telling me, they're called YouTubers.
Mm-hmm.
So YouTubers who are monetizing, my children were educating me on this whole process too, because apparently there's been monetization issues recently. But the whole notion is, well, how the money actually gets to point A, point B really doesn't matter to either endpoint. Like, Google doesn't particularly care, the YouTuber doesn't particularly care. And it's that same sort of notion of, well, I just want to send an email to you, Karen. I want you to receive it. I don't want to think about how you got mm-hmm. it. I don't want to think about what device you're using for it. And it's sort of enhancing or enabling both sides to make whatever choices they like.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do that, we have to talk between dissimilar things, right? So Google wants to partner with one of the leading commercial banks in the world and just have all this taken care of for them. the YouTuber wants not to have to necessarily have a bank account with Bank of America, although that might be a great idea, plug, 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 but they want to be able to receive funds through something simple. And in fact, they probably don't want to share a whole lot of information, may not want to share their address or their bank details mm-hmm. in order to be able to receive a traditional form of payment. Mm-hmm. So to me, the issue here is, how do we enable both sides of the ultimate payer-payee equation to have whatever choices they want? And we as an industry solve for the fact, well, that's necessarily going to mean that I'm going to transit back and forth between traditional payment methods, bank networks, new payment methods, new networks such as PayPal, and be able to go back and forth between those seamlessly. And when I say I want to go back and forth between those seamlessly, I'm glossing over a ton of challenges in what actually goes on in those great networks we use every day. Notch serves a huge function. Swift serves a huge function. The card associations serve a huge function, right? There's a lot of work that's going on to make those networks function properly and do what they're supposed to do. This is just the next level or the next stage, I think, of where we need to go with all of this so that we can allow those networks to interact with one another, or I would say interoperate with one another, and allow both halves, both sides of the network on both sides, to be able to, you know, continue to do transactions in the way that they expect.
Got it. So in your example, there is an intermediary, AKA a bank, that has a relationship with a player, a big tech company that has many, many, many thousands of endpoints that need to be paid for their services. YouTube is a good example. And what big tech company does is facilitate those payments via an alias called an email that then allows the distribution of payment using a payment method. And this is where I need clarification, determined by the individual, the receiver before it's sent, or how does that part of the transition work?
Oh yeah, well, in the ideal case, and this is the case that we're supporting, the receiver actually can decide how they're going to receive the money after the funds have already been committed. So Google can be done and say, yep, I need to pay this YouTuber. The average disbursement, as we've learned a little bit as we've gone along the way, is about $150 per month. So that $150 can actually be debited from Google's account and be ready funds. And then the question is, okay, how would you like those delivered? Do you want them through PayPal? Do you want them pushed onto a card? Do you want them through traditional ACH? That's fine. Would you like to use Zelle? Would you like to use Alipay, M-Pesa? It may depend on a number of factors. But the whole point being that at no point does Google actually care nor need to know, they shouldn't need to know, what form of payment mm-hmm. the YouTuber wants to accept. Mm-hmm. And, oh, by the way, in the world that's sort of coming at us, this wave that's building, there are real strict liabilities associated with holding on to somebody's bank details. Mm-hmm. Knowing bank details in a number of jurisdictions around the world creates obligations. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it anchors that data to the location in which you learned it. Singapore is a good example, Hong Kong, Germany, Sweden. There's a whole bunch of places, and I think we're going to see more of that here in the United States. We may even see it on a state-by-state basis. California's certainly been very aggressive about privacy data. But the point just simply being, why should Google have to know that you have a bank account with a given bank mm-hmm. in order to be able to pay you for your YouTube content? They mm-hmm. really shouldn't. Why should I have to know who you've decided to have carrier service with in order to be able to send you an email? So I think that's, if hopefully we framed a little bit, you know, sort of what mm-hmm. is interoperability, and that's sort of maybe stimulating some new thoughts. Let's just compare and contrast, right? Compare and contrast is, okay, no, everybody has to be connected to everything all the time, mm-hmm. right? So then the alternative is to say, okay, I have to have a pipe that goes all the way from Google Treasury to PayPal and deliver funds. And that is the world we live in today. People are building integrations that are end-to-end so that, hey, when I'm making this beneficiary payment to you, you have to tell me that you want to use PayPal. And we run those pipes all the way from the beginning, all the way to the end. It's like the olden days of telecommunications where there were actual physical wires mm-hmm. that connected the two people speaking on the phone, right? And that's the world of integration. It's incredibly expensive because everybody has to do the same things over and over again. As folks like Alipay and Klarna enter markets like North America, they have to go door to door to door to talk to merchants, to talk to acquirers, to talk to gateways, right? They have this huge challenge of showing up in all of these different environments, and that's why we see acceptance take so long mm-hmm. for even great ideas. It took PayPal the better part of 15 years to get to the level of acceptance that they have in North America, and obviously they're off in the rest of the world, and some of these other folks from the rest of the world are coming here, and you know, beautiful, beautiful things will happen, I'm sure, the markets are awesome. But the point is just simply, the challenge that we have today in the integration world is everybody has to make everything exactly the same all the way from beginning to end, and that's incredibly expensive. It takes an incredibly long time. It's hard work. All of this is hard work, but the real issue is we repeat it over and over and over again, as opposed to saying, hey, look, I can get to some endpoints, I can get to a bank, or I can get to a digital network. Let's do some stuff in the cloud. We use that phraseology if you like. Something in the middle that says, yeah, you connect to something you trust, they'll connect to something they trust, and now we'll do interconnecting in between, and that's where the magic happens.
Mm-hmm. There are players doing this, right? I mean, there aren't many, but there are players doing this, particularly when it comes to disbursements, corporates paying individuals, where they are structured to be the, you know, the disbursements hub, if you will, to enable payment to be made into any particular endpoint as desired by the receiver. So it isn't as if this isn't being done, right?
Oh, right. But I would just argue that, yeah, most of what we see today, and there are awesome companies doing awesome things in this space, and awesome companies doing awesome things on the reverse, like how do you bring money in?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you bring the money in into a common endpoint so that can be delivered. But really, if you look under the covers, what did they solve for? They've solved for integration. Like the point at which everything becomes the same thing is the point at which you've settled funds, right? When you turn it into
mm-hmm.
cash.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit different. That's a little bit like saying, hey, look, you know what? I've got all of these different endpoints, and I'd like to send them all to this person who's going to read them for me, retype them, and then send them to me through the thing that I already understand, right? It's not necessarily solving for interoperability, but it gives you the same benefit, right? And it's, I think that is the success of the TransferWises of the world. That is the success of the Adyens and the Stripes of the world, is precisely because this is such a huge problem. It's so expensive to deal with this. And so when somebody steps up and says, yeah, I'm going to handle that for you, it becomes really, really valuable. Right, and in our way of talking about that, the distinction is, you know, versus Modo, those folks are going to hold money, touch money, and move money on your behalf.
Mm-hmm.
So from a Modo perspective, when we're talking about interoperability, we're talking about a technology and a communications and a software, a computing problem, really. And the solutions that I think you're thinking of, Karen, and tell me if you think I've got this wrong, I know you will. I think the things you're thinking of are the ones where they say, you know what, we're going to collapse, we're going to do this work for you, we're going to hold the money, we're going to touch the money, we're going to move the money, and that's how we're going to solve the problem for you. And that to me is a great example of why this is a problem, but it's also a great example of what integration looks like and why it's hard. Those folks spend a ton of time and money doing it. It's not easy.
So in your world, what does the big tech company have to do in order to enable this? Don't they have to integrate with said intermediary?
Well, they already are, right? So everybody has a relationship with the bank. And so quite honestly, Modo has focused on banks and networks and large digital wallets and other owners of payments methods, precisely because interoperability for them is an all-day, everyday concern.
Mm-hmm.
And so these folks are the nexus, if you will, on the network. And so if we're doing cross connects, or we're doing the interconnections between these different networks with these different methods of payment, that they have this problem in spades, and they're the ones that are being pressed that say, hey, look, you know, I would like to offer my clients the ability to move money to a digital wallet, from a digital wallet, keep the connection with the bank, and then enable that transaction to work differently. Some of the other use cases, which I know we've talked about in the past, are this exact same set of issues to bring a method of payment like Klarna into a merchant without the merchant having to do the integration. So money going the other way, right? This mm-hmm. is money in instead of money out. But the idea of, hey, Klarna has a method of payment, and they really just don't want to have to, in all cases, do that direct integration with their merchant clients. They want to give them an opportunity to say, well, what do you already know? And in this case, they already know the MasterCard network. We've leveraged the MasterCard network in order to provide this interoperability. So a merchant can use the MasterCard network that they're already on in order to be able to access the Klarna method of payment. So it's a great way for merchants to be able to say, yep, I'd like to participate with this great new experience, this smooth payments that Klarna has delivered. I'd like to be able to offer my customers the ability, my consumer customers, the ability to pay over time and all the other wonderful things part of the Klarna value proposition, but integration is hard. It takes me a long time. It becomes an ongoing maintenance. And so what Modo has done there is to say, hey, look, I'm going to go from this nexus point where Klarna has, you know, 60 million consumers or some odd, a giant number of consumers, a lot in Europe, but growing very rapidly here in North America as well, and be able to deliver those to merchants without the merchants having to go and do something they're unfamiliar with, right? They know how to process MasterCard transactions already. And so the interoperability there is to say, okay, I've got these two dissimilar things, PayPal, excuse me, Klarna on the one side, MasterCard on the other. And both parties can stay on the networks they're on, understand what they do, and you know, never have to worry about that in the center. We believe over time that we'll be able to sort of sell this interoperability concept or this vision to a lot of participants who aren't necessarily the nexus for various network integration points or intersection points, I guess is what I really mean to say. And that would create an opportunity for us to sort of move out further into the value chain. Mm-hmm. But right now, we have plenty to say grace over. I'm very thankful for the work that we're able to do with the clients we have, like Alliance Data Systems and Verifone and FIS.
Who are you disrupting in your model?
Well, disrupting. We just had this conversation a little bit on your 2017 in review mm-hmm. discussion. I'm not a huge proponent that disruption is required, right? So, you know, that doesn't mean disruption doesn't happen or can't happen in payments. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not trying to say that. My point is just simply we're gonna have the payments rails that we have today with us in 30 years. Like they're going to be doing many of the same things then that they do now. Whether or not they have such primary places in our lives, that may change certainly. And there may be other things that are introduced, PayPal being a perfectly good example over the last 20 years, but Klarna being a great example over the next 20 years perhaps. So the thing that I believe is really critical is not how do we take food off of somebody else's table, which I think is the traditional model of disruption, but how do we sort of free everybody up to do the job using the best tool for the job? And I think we have a lot of substituting going on in our payments marketplace. I think people use check, they use ACH, they use kind of payment methods that everybody agrees, you know, if we had our druthers, we'd just make this go away. But we're still using them because there's specific things we need out of those experiences or out of those methods. And so for me, the issue is, hey, look, if I can free everybody up to make the choices that they want, partner with the people that they want, and have the assurance that they can sort of complete the full life cycle of all the different ways they may want to interact or all the different ways in which they may want to send or receive value, then I personally don't think that means we have taken food off of anybody's table. I think the whole pie grows. When we look at interoperability, again, let's go back to communications for just a moment. you look at the impact of the internet. What does that mean? What does that mean for media companies? What does that mean for a whole bunch of different things? Absolutely, there has been, you know, massive, as Schumpeter would say, creative destruction. But, and that may, in fact, well happen in payments. I just think it'll take a different form. And interoperability versus integration isn't a upstarts versus traditionals kind of dynamic. It's a let's free everybody up to make the decisions that they need to make. Kind of, we have the absolute privilege of enjoying DeHawk being on our advisory board. In a number of conversations with him, this is where the Visa Association came from. This was precisely the philosophy that he was very committed to in forming that association. And I think there's some sense in which we're kind of actually going back to a set of ideas about letting issuers and acquirers do what they like, go to market how they like, and finding relatively simple things to have shared in the middle. Obviously, his work predated the existence of computing networks. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he foresaw just legendarily all kinds of new transitions in how we travel and what business looks like and all kinds of things. But as we look forward further, to me, if we go back to the principle of how do we enable everybody to make their own decisions, their own way, for their own purposes, and free them up? That is what's missing today. The reason it's missing is because of this lack of interoperability. And I think that that's going to unlock all kinds of opportunity for us economically.
But as I listen to you describe this, it's a very bank-centric model. And based on the various things that you describe, it suggests that the banks really become the focal point for how these funds get dispersed. And you talk about putting money into people's accounts, either through a digital wallet or directly into their account. And then you talk about it going in the opposite direction. It suggests some disintermediation, or maybe I'm reading too much into it.
Well, so I would say, yes, I think that's already happened. I think people online generally trust PayPal as much or more, or Klarna in Europe as much or more as they do their banks to secure and to solve for the issues that they run into when making purchases online or selling things online. And that's why those businesses grow the way that they do, and that's why their adoption is the way that it is. But I also think fairly firmly that I don't see, and I think it's maybe a good point to say the words Bitcoin and blockchain, I don't see fiat currencies being held by anything other than licensed, chartered financial institutions, sort of like ever. It's too important to central banks, it's too important to governments, it's too important to the things people go to war over. Like, I mean, really, really practical issues of geopolitics boil down to currencies. And we talk about trade wars, we talk about cold wars, we talk about hot wars. I mean, like, the whole point is those are all wars, right? This is serious stuff, and people take it seriously. So I, at the end of the day, don't think anyone other than a bank who currently, every bank in every country has a licensed monopoly to hold the electronic form of whatever that fiat currency is, granted by whatever sovereignty did that, right? And I just think there are a whole bunch of tanks on a whole bunch of continents that will back that up forever. So that's kind of where I kind of come down on, okay, well, who's going to go to war? Who's going to bleed for Bitcoin? Mm-hmm. People are going to they're going to talk for Bitcoin, and there may be some really good evidence that people in control currency environments and under, you know, maybe more totalitarian kinds of governments want things like Bitcoin in order to like leak out value and store value elsewhere. And I think there's actually a solid use case for Bitcoin in those circumstances as a store of value, as an exchange of value. I have tons of problems with the typical use cases, but the whole point there is just simply giving people the ability to distribute transactions, I think, is what we're really seeing this pent-up demand for. But at the end of the day, they'd really rather, I think the market would really rather do that with the quote-unquote clean and understood and government-issued currencies that are the foundation of our economy today. So I am very much a doubter on the value of cryptocurrencies as a meaningful store, meaningful exchange mechanism. I am a bit of a doubter on blockchain just because it disrupts the whole trust model. I think distributed technologies are exactly right. Obviously, I'm super committed to interoperability. But at the end of the day, I think you end up with banks being kind of sort of the sorts of things they are, whether or not they're the same name, doing exactly the same things to the same people, precisely because that's a legislative monopoly.
Well, Bruce, as always, when you and I chat, we always book 30 minutes too few to have our conversation, but we do need to wrap.
It's
been a great conversation, very thought provoking, which is why I love talking to you, which we'll do again very soon. Bruce, thanks so much for joining me today.
Always a pleasure.
Have a great rest of the day, good weekend, and happy holidays, everyone. Bye-bye now.